The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, I'm Sif Hyder, the founder of Array. I'm a wellness entrepreneur and digital creator, and this is my show, the Dream Bigger podcast. Listen, I love dreaming big, but you know what I love more? Actually having the resources to make those big dreams happen. And hey, dreams can sometimes be private jets, but other times they can look a little something like having the best skin of your damn life, or starting a successful business, or delving into spirituality. So on this podcast, I chat with experts and thought leaders from different fields about their tips and tricks on doing exactly that. So let's get right into it.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Dream Bigger podcast. I have such a good episode for you this week. It's with Erin Deering, who is the co-founder of Triangle Swimwear and an incredible author. Now, I don't know if you remember back in, I want to say it was like 2015, 16-ish, the amount of pictures on social media of the triangle bikini, it was literally everywhere. It was the bikini to have. In fact, I have a flat lay, if you want to scroll back, way back on my Instagram, I have a flat lay with the iconic triangle bikini. And I'm so really excited to speak to Erin because she is, of course, the co-founder of this brand that was like the brand back in the 2010s. But also she has been, you know, in this stage of her life, very open about mental health. She's been like a big advocate for that. She's been a big advocate for, I guess, finding your happiness and your purpose outside of just building a business. And that is what we get into today. Her story is so incredible. I loved how open and forthcoming she was. I think there's so much to learn from her. She is so wise and she is just so freaking cool. Like, let me tell you, when this woman walked into the studio, I was like, I want to know everything that you are currently wearing because my God, you look so chic. Anyway, a woman with so much depth, someone we can learn so much from. And she just built something that was like iconic for the 2010s. I think she like really led the movement of influencers kind of pushing a brand forward. Like she was first to do so much from a marketing angle. Anyway, we get into all of that. And I'm really excited to bring you the conversation. Before we get into the conversation, though, I want to bring you this week's review, which comes to us from Caitlin M. Kenny. And she says, as an entrepreneur, Augustine Hat Co., in a small town that lacks community, I absolutely live for this podcast. Sif discusses so much upfront, honest information when it comes to all aspects of an entrepreneur's life. Business tips and stories, motivation, overall health, all things that are important on the business front and home life. Her solo and guest episodes make you feel like you're part of a thriving community. Caitlin, I'm so happy that I can make you feel that way. Honestly, if you think this about the podcast now, wait till you listen to today's episode. And I'm so grateful that you wrote me this review. I cannot tell you how much it means to me. And guys, if you do have a couple of minutes, I would so, so appreciate if you took the time to leave me a rating and a review. All you have to do is open up the Apple Podcast app, scroll down to the part where it says leave a rating and a review. In the rating section, if you feel like I've earned it, please leave me a 5-star rating. And in the review section, honestly, any information you give me is beneficial for me, okay? My goal is to constantly show up and give you guys episodes that bring you value, whether that is with guests or solos. And I take what you say really seriously. Like if there's a guest you want to see on the show, let me know. I pick guests based on your feedback. If there's a solo topic that you want me to cover, let me know. I will literally do an episode for you. So the more you tell me, the more I can do as a host. And honestly, I'm just so grateful anytime I hear from you. It's why I do what I do. So cannot explain how grateful I would be. Anyway, with that, let's welcome Erin to the Dream Bigger podcast.
I want to actually ask you how you went about starting Triangle. Because yeah. I have to tell you, I told my husband today, I was like, you know, I'm speaking to the founder of Triangle.
Yes.
And even he remembers like how big Triangle was because back when I started on Instagram, I like one of my earliest pictures is still a flat lay on my table
with a
triangle bikini.
A flat lay.
Swear.
Yes.
Because like you guys were seeding creators even back then. Yep. So I want to know how you even started this brand.
Yeah. Well, my co-founder and I, he was in design. So he had had a brand before, like a little brand in Australia. Australia t-shirt brand. And then he was working as a designer. And I was in e-commerce at the time. So different industries, but still kind of in fashion. And we met, and on our second date, he said, like, let's go to the beach. And I was like, totally, like, that's fine, whatever. Like, stressing out so hard because I was not a bikini girl. It wasn't like I was the girl that had the drawers full of bikinis. I had like two and they were not nice. They were not sexy. They were like ugly. And so I had to go and find something really cute, like really fun, fashion. Like, I wanted to show my personality in a bikini, which I kind of thought I'd be able to go and find something. I couldn't find anything. And so I got down to the beach and I told him how hard it was to find a bikini that wasn't too expensive, that also wasn't too cheap, because in Australia there was a lot of surf brands like Roxy, Billabong, Quicksilver, and they owned that cheaper space. And I was like, there's nothing for a girl like me that doesn't want to spend too much on a bikini but wants to still look really cute in it. And so he goes, really? You're so right. Let's start a brand. Like, let's do swimwear. And I was 27, so I was like, okay, let's start a brand.
Wait, on your second date.
And like, legitimately, that's where it started.
And people are out here being like, he didn't text me.
No, I know. Like, and we were like, let's lock in a future together right now. I don't even know you. I've never, like, second date.
If he wanted to, he would.
Yeah. No, truly. It was that thing. And it was so overwhelming because it was this romantic relationship, like, burgeoning at the same time as this professional relationship, which was very unusual and unique. And like, I mean, I had nothing to compare it to. No one ever has had anything. So I'm kind of like on my own, just going, what? Okay, let's just do it. Yeah, cool. This is fun.
So what year is this?
This is 2011.
Oh my God. So yes. This is like right before social media almost.
Yeah. Like, we were using Instagram. Most people were on Facebook. Instagram was around, but it was still then. It was just like weird sepia filtered autumnal imagery of like the park. And like, you know, it was so, it was very arty. Like, Instagram was like a real arty platform. And then it was the year after that, it, you know, 2012 was when businesses started to go, oh, I see what we can do here. This is a cool platform.
That's crazy. Okay, so I mean, this is, I feel like that time was so interesting because obviously Instagram was the wild, wild west, which honestly, it's almost like a double-edged sword, because when we look back on it, we're like, oh my God, it was so easy to blow up. But at the same time, like, people who are navigating it, you're like, what the fuck do I do?
No, truly. It was like, it was the wild west. It was exciting, but it was also unknown. Yes. And it was like, do we put all our eggs in one basket with this platform? It's free, but like, what's it going to do? And like, how's it going to evolve? And how do you, like, you know, it was like, how do you build a business off it?
Yeah.
So we were just doing what felt right. And that was, you know, at the time, blogs and bloggers were obviously really popular. And so they were moving over onto the Instagram platform, and they were moving over in this still kind of sponsored collaboration style way of like working, which we couldn't afford. And also, I just felt like it didn't work on Instagram back then, or it didn't need to be. Yeah. I was like, it's a new platform, so we can do something new here. And so at the time, we were a new brand, and I just wanted to get the word out there about the brand. So for me, I was like, our bikinis, we'd worked really, really hard. That's why we moved to Asia to start the brand. I was like, our cost of the bikinis was really small. So like, let's, you know, to gift the bikinis and to send them out, let's do that to as many girls as possible and have this, like, I guess, you know, gifting strategy. But at the time for me, it was less about, well, it was just as much about exposure as it was about actually getting feedback, because not many people were buying their bikinis. So we're in Hong Kong going, all right, do we actually know if these bikinis are good? Like, we need some kind of feedback. We need some girls to, like, actually wear them and tell us what they think, like a wear test kind of scenario. So that is kind of, in my head, how the gifting started, because I just wanted girls to get them, tell me what they thought of them, which also meant building that organic relationship from the very, very start, because then I needed them to feel comfortable to just be actually like, they're amazing, or the bottoms didn't really fit me. And they were still nice about it, but then I'd be like, okay, cool. Like, why? Like, what is that our fit? Is that your body type? Should we sell separate sizes, which we ended up doing? We sold sets, but in separate top and bottom sizes. So all of that gifting was really just to inform us as a brand on like what to do next and how to move forward.
There's one thing about me. It's that I take the advice of the guests that come on this show really, really seriously. So when I hear something, I make those changes so quick to my life. And so when I heard that I should be sleeping on a silk pillowcase, I made that change. And I started to use Blissy silk pillowcases, which are incredible for its anti-aging qualities. Set yourself up for better sleep with Blissy's award-winning 100% mulberry silk pillowcases. Seriously, silk is what is best for your hair and skin, okay? It reduces frizz, tangles, prevents breakages. So right now I've been on my hair care journey and I feel like what silk pillowcases are for your hair, it's so gentle, it's so good. And also the skin benefits is pretty incredible. Sleeping on silk pillowcases allows the moisture in your hair and skin to like just continue to be there from your skincare products because cotton absorbs all of this moisture from your face, whereas silk doesn't. So you can say goodbye to wrinkles, dry, flaky, and red skin in the morning and wake up with healthier and shinier hair. There are a lot of dupes out there that claim that satin can be an alternative to silk, but that is not the case. Satin is made from synthetic fibers like polyester, while silk is a luxurious all-natural fiber. Silk is more breathable, moisture-wicking, and gentle. It's also durable and long-lasting. Think of it as an investment in getting better sleep and waking up feeling ready to take on the day. Also, I refuse to use anything except for a silk eye mask as well. I've been this way for years. I love my Blissy silk eye mask as well. I honestly cannot sleep unless it's pitch dark, and an eye mask helps with that. And a silk one is so necessary because otherwise there's like tugging on your skin, especially around your eye area, and we don't want those wrinkles. Blissy pillowcases are made of 100% mulberry silk, which is naturally hypoallergenic, so you can sleep more comfortably without itching or rashes. And unlike other silk pillowcases, these are the highest quality silk and are machine washable and durable. So with Blissy, honestly, everybody loves them. They have a ton of different prints and colors, and they make for great gifts because there's an option for literally anyone. Also, men love them too. They have over 1 million raving fans, and you could be next. Try now risk-free for 60 nights at blissy.com/dreambigger. And get an additional 30% off. That's blissy.com/dreambigger and use code dreambigger to get an additional 30% off. Your skin and hair will thank you. I am constantly looking to upgrade my everyday routine just so it's constantly optimized and up to date with the science. So I have talked about my sauna blanket for an eternity, I feel like. I use it before bed. It really helps me get better sleep. And that sauna blanket is, of course, from Boncharge. And so now I am hooked on their red light face mask. Now, if you've not heard of Boncharge, it is a holistic wellness brand with a huge range of evidence-based products that optimize your life in every way. It's founded on science and inspired by nature, and all Boncharge products adopt ancestral ways of living in our modern world. They have so many incredible products, but right now, my latest obsession has been their red light mask. So red light mask is pretty incredible. The science behind it is phenomenal. And if you've noticed, when you go get a facial, they'll sometimes put you under a red light. That is because it helps with wrinkles and fine lines, sore jaw, eczema, migraines, acne, scar tissue, wound healing. Honestly, the list goes on and on. Red light therapy has been reviewed in over 4,000 peer-reviewed studies, with 400 plus being double-blind placebo trials. Not only do these studies show amazing health benefits, not one has shown any negative side effects. So this is what I do. I use the red light face mask for about 10 to 20 minutes at the end of the day. I sometimes pair it with my sauna blanket because I can't use my hands at that point. So I just lay there and it's like a very relaxing experience. It includes both near infrared and red light, which boosts collagen and elastin productions. The Boncharge red light mask is sleek and lightweight in design and has a 1-year warranty and has zero EMF radiation, which is incredibly important. They ship worldwide in rapid time and are trusted by leading health professionals worldwide. They offer easy returns and exchanges and a 12-month warranty on all red light therapy devices. Boncharge also has other amazing products such as low blue light light bulbs, blue light glasses, EMF protection products, infrared sauna blankets, and 100% blackout sleep masks, all backed by science. Go to boncharge.com/dreambigger and use coupon code dreambigger to save 15%. That's boncharge.com/dreambigger and use coupon code dreambigger to save 15%. Enjoy.
Hey girl, hey, welcome to Taste of Taylor, my weekly podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Strecker. You might know me from SiriusXM Radio. I mean, I was there for like 12 years after all. But then Howard Stern allegedly got jealous of me, so I had to leave. I was actually able to pull myself up by the bootstraps and start my own podcast, Taste of Taylor, which is now officially with Dear Media. I'm so excited to say that. Ha! So I promise you in this podcast, you're going to either learn about something, you're going to be inspired by someone that's like always coming from a perspective of like humor, then this is the place for you. I hope you enjoy this little snack.
And so is that how you started to initially build hype? Like you guys launched this brand and then like right from the get-go, you're like, okay, I'm going to start gifting girls. Like that was the first thing that came into your brain?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, because, you know, we're on this new platform that everyone's starting to move on to. There were a few brands in Australia that were on there and they were doing good things, but they were doing, it was like back then in Australia, especially what was happening was they were doing these like giveaways. And so like five or 10 brands would collaborate and all do like a giveaway, which we were like, that's kind of cool. And I think we did one or two, which was really good for us because we got like a new kind of new eyes on the brand. But I didn't feel that was really sustainable. And I didn't like the like neediness of it or the like real, it just felt really, it just didn't feel personal enough. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something that would build a connection and build a relationship. And because I was so in, you know, like in the trenches every day doing everything and talking to everyone and shipping every order and seeing where they were going, it felt really natural to add that element of just sending out these bikinis to girls, as many as we could, finding girls, like trawling Instagram for like girls that fit what I thought the brand was, which was really just a girl like me. And that's all I knew at the time. We were making bikinis for me. So I was trying to find girls that were like me, you know, like easygoing, liked fashion, not overly sexy, because this was the day when there was still the sexy bikini girl really out there, like the
Instagram model vibe.
Yeah, well, they were called in Australia, it's like lads mags, like all the like, they were like, you know, like big boobs, big bum, and like real, like showing it all off, like on the front of a magazine. They were still like the bikini girls. So I was trying to steer clear of that only because it just wasn't me. And like I knew how to connect to girls like me. Yeah. So I went after them.
Very interesting. Okay, and then you said you moved to Asia?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's just
rewind.
You start a brand with your co-founder on your second date, and then you guys move to Asia?
Yeah.
Please tell us more.
So we were both in Melbourne, Australia, and Triangle was like a side hustle. So we were doing it at nighttime. We were like coming up with the logo, coming up with the brand colors, which were black and white, very thrilling. But we wanted to be as like simple as possible. And we wanted just to, you know, get into the market and just be straightforward. So we were doing all of that, but like after hours. And a couple of months after that, so that was sort of November 2011. And by like April 2012, we both kind of knew that the brand would track at a really slow pace if we didn't commit to it fully. Now, a lot of people committing fully means like maybe quitting their job, which is enough. But for us, that meant quitting our jobs and moving overseas because we wanted to be close to our supply chain, which was in China. So we moved to Hong Kong, being a little like not in full China, because that was obviously like a lot more of a scary commitment and complete, like Hong Kong's at least a melting pot of a million different cultures. So it's kind of a bit safer. I'd never even been there before. So I'm like, yeah, I'll move there. Like I have no idea where I'm going and what it's going to be like. But I was always the act now, think later girl. So I was like, why not? There was no reason. Like we didn't have kids. We didn't have any commitments. We didn't really have any money, but we were like, that's fine. We'll make it. And so we sold all our things within like, you know, we made the decision in like mid-April and very beginning of June we moved over. So like, and I remember everyone back home just being like, do not go. This is insane. Which a lot of founders will say in hindsight, when someone says that to you, that usually means you're onto a good thing, because most rational people wouldn't do the things that founders do.
I could not agree more. I think in any sense, like even if, for example, I remember when I was telling even my dad, who's, by the way, extremely supportive and like has been right from the start. But I remember him, remember when I first told him about the idea of Array and he's like, why would this work? Like, why would anyone buy from you? You're not a doctor. And I'm like, no, but like, I'll work with a doctor and like the branding will be like amazing. And these are all the different ways that it'll, you know, stand out. And even my dad couldn't understand it. And he owns a business, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, with founders, we have insane ideas.
Yeah.
And it just means that we're early and on to something that other people just don't understand yet.
Yeah, exactly. And you just have to back yourself in. And we were just like, I was just like, I would rather do this and fail than not do it. Like a big mantra for me is sort of like, what am I going to regret more? Yes. And whatever I'm going to regret more is like, then I do the thing, you mm-hmm. know? And so that was obvious. It was like, I'm going to regret if I stay in my safe job. I was in fashion. It was like, I was moving up. I was mm-hmm. getting promoted, but it felt like the ceiling was a lot lower than I thought it was going to be. And I was like, the freedom of work. I mean, it's so funny because you're like, for me, it was a lot of the freedom of having no boss when really you go into like working so much. You're 24/7 when you're, especially early days. it was so naive of me to be like, this is going to be so cruisy. And it was for a few months when we moved because we hadn't actually put anything to market. And so that whole bit was like, you can take as long as you want with that bit. You know, we had no wholesale accounts to mm-hmm. that had committed, and we didn't, so we were just putting it things out when we could. It was when we went to market that you're like, oh my god, this is actually now an insane amount of work that I have to do.
And did it explode right away, or was it kind of like a slower build?
Look, I would say it was both, because for me it felt slow-ish, but if you look at the actual timeline, like we launched our first bikini sale was January 2013. Mm-hmm. And 6 months later we were selling like over 100 pairs a day. So it was like, when you look at how long brands take to succeed.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It was very quick. It was like essentially an overnight success.
And do you think it was because you were gifting so heavily, or was it like another factor that you think?
Look, I think there were so many factors. You know, uh-huh. we were really fortunate with the timing of Instagram. Yeah. We were really fortunate with our strategy being a new strategy. Mm-hmm. We had things like live chat on the website, which I implemented too, and I did it. I was like, hi, I'm the founder. It was so funny. And I loved that. And so we did all these things. Like every single touch point was considered, because Craig and I, my co-founder, had such different skill sets. Mm. So whilst he was so focused on the fabric and the quality and so particular about that and nailing that, I was so hyper-focused on the customer and the experience and supporting her and nurturing her. So those two things came together and they just worked really harmoniously. Mm-hmm. So it was that. It was the Instagram, very fortunate timing-wise. The bikini itself was a really different bikini. Like the first bikinis we put out were nylon spandex, classic fabric. They were like a little graphic kind of design. They'd been done. Mm-hmm. And then we were like, okay, it was going okay, but we were like, this isn't the thing. This is not the hook. This is not the like bikini that we feel we could really do super, super well with. And so Craig started sampling so many different, like some hideous, like totally unworkable things, but then got neoprene and was like this. And so we did this neoprene bikini, and then we added the black binding onto the outside of it. And that was just so instantly
so
recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
And also as a flat lay, whereas normal bikinis didn't sit as well, that sat flat. And it had structure and it just looked so good. And so that on Instagram was just...
It was made
really,
for Instagram.
It was made for Instagram. And like everyone wanted to see photos of girls on the beach. Everyone wanted to think about vacation time and holidays. And so we were always putting photos up of... We were so strict about what photos we posted. And it was always clean background, like blue sky, white sand, like really clear on that. So it evoked this feeling of... a good time.
Yeah.
And that just worked so well.
Yeah. It was such an era.
Oh my gosh.
On the internet.
It was the golden era.
Yes.
It just felt like, and like e-commerce was becoming this big thing, and the novelty of being able to shop like 24/7.
I know.
In your
I know.
Bed. Like it was so exciting.
What a time
oh
to be
my
alive.
God. I was like, I wanted to be able to like, I just wanted to service all those girls that were like, and you know, for us, it was a really big thing. Like the brand really launched in e-com in a way of I don't know if anyone, you know, can like say the same thing, but swimwear fitting rooms are like, oh my god, the lighting,
I know,
like,
it's
why do I suddenly
so tragic,
like no, I look terrified, I'm so scared in there. So we wanted, and like honestly, it's probably why I only had two bikinis when we started Triangle, because I was just like, it's not for me.
No, it's like not conducive to a good time, honestly.
No,
the lighting,
it's like, just turn them off.
It's really
candlelight, please, or yeah. something, like do better. So I really, like a big push for me initially was that sort of intention of being like, we're going to ship these to your house mm-hmm. and you can try them on in a room where you know your lighting is good, where you know you're going to look nice and feel confident mm-hmm. and like not have someone like being like, hey, going in there.
Yeah.
Like,
oh.
Get away. I'm in a bikini. I'm very vulnerable. So like that was a really big part for me, which I think was just another thing that played into it. It just felt really nice for people to like have that safety and security.
We'll be right back.
you're resetting for spring and setting new intentions for either cooking healthier or making healthier choices for your home, then you need to try Caraway's non-toxic cookware. I cannot explain to you my obsession with my cookware since I switched over to Caraway. I made that switch last year. All my cookware is black with the gold detailing, like all the handles are gold. It is incredibly chic and, as I said, non-toxic. Now, for me, having non-toxic cookware, which was also really easy to clean, was a priority for me because I just don't have time to sit here and scrub my pans for days and days. And Caraway's pans are so incredibly easy to clean. It is a godsend, okay? With so many collections to explore, there's sure to be a Caraway for every kind of cook. Caraway's internet-famous kitchenware is a staple for any home and comes with various modern shades to fit with any design aesthetic. Ditch the chemicals with Caraway. Caraway Home's non-toxic kitchenware features a chemical-free ceramic coating so food can be prepared with peace of mind that no hard-to-pronounce chemicals will leach into your healthy ingredients. And just as a reminder, Caraway's iconic cookware set comes with the sauté pan, fry pan, Dutch oven, and saucepan, plus lids for all of them, including a canvas lid holder and magnetic pan rack for storage. It's the ultimate kitchen setup and will save you $150 versus buying all the items individually. Plus, if you visit carawayhome.com/dreambigger, you can take an additional 10% off your next purchase. The deal is exclusive for our listeners, so visit carawayhome.com/dreambigger or use code dreambigger at checkout. Caraway, non-toxic cookware made modern.
My mom is like Superwoman, okay? There is nothing this woman can't do, and I feel like she stretches the hours in her day to make it feel like she has 48 hours instead of 24. And as I see now my friends go into motherhood as well, I honestly cannot believe their abilities. You know, I think that they are so special. Like, something happens to a woman when she becomes a mom, and let me tell you, they do so much that they, of all people, deserve a spa day. And so I'm so excited to partner with Osea for their Mega Moisture Duo. So if you go back to my blog, Icing and Glitter, this is like OG, people will know what I'm talking about. I talked about Osea back in, I think, 2017 or 18. That is how long I have loved this brand for. So their Mega Moisture Duo is a pack of two luxurious body care moisturizer, their Undaria Algae Body Oil and their Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. And both feature Osea's signature uplifting all-natural citrusy scent. I personally love this duo because it is insane for hydration. I feel like my body drinks it up and it gives me such a glow. I just love using it. And also, Niche steals my stock. Like, it's actually borderline annoying. I personally think that body care is self-care. I love taking time to kind of moisturize my body after I take a shower. And I also love smelling good. I think body care is such a conduit to, like, you know, the first layer of your perfume. And I love the incredible, like, citrusy, gorgeous smell of Osea products. Also, taking care of your body is a moment to practice mindfulness, self-love, compassion, all of the good things that we all need at the end or the beginning of our day. So Osea has an offer for you guys. You can treat your mom to the everyday spa experience she deserves with clean vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code DREAMBIGGER at oseamalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to oseamalibu.com and use code DREAMBIGGER for 10% off. Enjoy.
It's so interesting the time that you guys kind of like came into being. Uh-huh. It was like really, you're right. It was the golden age. So many new things were happening all at once. So with that, I want you to tell everyone the Kendall Jenner story because I was doing my research and I was like, wait, this is so wild because it was such a different era. But I'm going to let you get into it.
Yeah, it really was. So our gifting strategy was working really well. This was sort of only like 4 or 5 months of being in, you know, of the business kind of being in operation. And our gifting strategy was working so well that we extended the gifting to groups of girls. So what I was you know, I wanted that feeling of a girl to get a bikini to be like a bigger feeling. And so I was like, if I found a girl that I liked, I would be like, okay, I would love to send you a bikini. And do you have like three or four girlfriends that would be interested as well? And then I just knew the feeling of that was going to just be so much more powerful, because then they'd be like, oh my God, yes. And they'd get their like three friends and they'd all pick which one they wanted and they'd all discuss it and they'd all get them and they'd have all that. So it was all these moments and moments and moments. So that started to work really well for us. That was obviously at a bigger cost, but we were doing pretty well. We were pretty profitable by then anyway.
But I also think that that's a really smart strategy, which would probably even work today.
I think it would, because it's playing on the word of mouth marketing.
Yes.
And that sort of herd mentality. I mean, that sounds negative, but it's not. But that kind of group mentality of like all the girls getting together, like, what do we want? And mm-hmm. this brand's cool. And then it becomes that social proof within like five girls, and then they all go and share it with like these girls, and it's like more powerful to have more voices.
Well, it's funny because we did, I think it was last year for Valentine's Day, where we went out to like some of our customers and like, you know, just like top tier like loyalty members, and we were like, we want to gift you and your best friend, and they were so happy, you know, and they got to pick who they could send like Array to.
Yeah.
But it's really smart that you were doing that with like a few different girls with bikinis. Because, yeah. I mean, like, I feel like when you put on your bikini, you're going to the beach or on holiday, it's like with your friends, you know?
Yeah,
so it makes sense to spread the word like that.
Exactly. And you're all going to talk before about, like, what are you wearing? What are you taking? And that actually, like, in Australia, the triangle kind of movement of all the young girls wearing it has still carried through. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'll go down to the beach and there's, like, 10 teenagers and, like, six or seven of them are wearing triangle.
Oh,
and I'm like, oh, bless.
So special.
I know. I'm like, yay. So that was kind of happening. So we were doing that a lot. And then we were trying to think, okay, we're now getting a little bit more known. So let's go after some big fish. Like, let's find some really well-known celebrities and influencers and let's, like, send to them. Mm-hmm. And obviously the biggest one who was within our, I guess, like, demographic of who we wanted was Kendall. Because Kendall was... She was younger. She was like 16 or 17 at the time. She was very sporty, athletic. That was kind of
like the perfect triangle girl.
She was the perfect triangle girl, like the perfect triangle girl. And we already had relationships with Bella Hadid and Hailey Baldwin Bieber. And we were already gifting them. So they were already triangle girls even before. And like, I hadn't even put two and two together that they all, you know, we just didn't know. It was like the world wasn't as open and as like as transparent as it is now. We know everyone's everything. So I was like, oh, hang on. And I kind of put, because we wanted to gift Kendall, but we knew we wouldn't. I mean, there was no DMs back then. No. She already had millions of followers. So it wasn't like we were ever going to reach out to her. And we weren't doing any paid anything at the time. It just wasn't our speed. We didn't want to do it. We thought that it would kill the organic relationship. So we weren't doing it. So we were like, how else do we get to Kendall? And so I did a lot of deep diving into like who she was friends with and who she was hanging out with outside of Hailey and Bella. And there were like three or four other girls. So we started going really hard on building relationships with them. So I was like gifting them, getting to know them, making sure I took care of them, getting them all sorted with all the triangle they could want, except for Kendall. So my hope was that they'd be all together, like by a pool. And they were always posting kind of doing that. Like they were young girls. So they were doing what they were all doing around spring. And they were getting by their friends' pools and hanging out and at the beach. And I was like, surely at some point she's going to be like, why am I not getting these? Like, what is going on? And one morning I woke up, we were in Hong Kong, and I was like, you know, this was during our really busy, I mean, it was always busy, but the start of that crazy time. So like, I was going to bed at like 1 a.m. and then I would just wake up and like at 5 a.m. Like the first time I would wake, I would pull my laptop onto my lap and just start working. Mm-hmm. And like, I did it this one morning and I had an email and it was from a really random Gmail account. And I just knew, because it was like, it had Kendall or Kenny in there. And I was like, I just had that feeling, you know, you start that like in your stomach, you're like, this is something. And I was like, hey, Erin, I got your email address from my girlfriends. They're all wearing triangle. I really love them. Am I able to get some as well?
Aww.
And we were just like, we were throwing a lot of crazy ideas around to do things. Like it wasn't like this was our one big shot. We were like trying to get onto everyone at all times in any way possible. But this, it was just like,
huge.
Oh my God, this worked. So we sent her everything because we were like, oh yes, oh, we forgot you. Oh, sorry. And it actually was genuine because we weren't even able to get hold of her. Like even I couldn't have found an email if I tried.
Mm-hmm.
So we sent everything to her, like the whole collection, like everything. And then she tweeted. And this was back in the glory days where something like that would
change
literally.
Your business, yeah.
And it did. It just brought so many more eyes onto the brand. And what it did is we were already in the States. but it just brought this social proof, this kind of cemented, this brand's legit. Because that was what a lot of it was. Like, until then, it was a lot of, I'd get like live chat messages, or we'd get emails, or we'd get comments on Instagram like, are you guys legitimate? And because we were shipping from Hong Kong, because where we were living, people were like, is this dodgy? Like, is this sus? Because people still think today that it's an American brand, because we really were conscious to stay very far away from being the founders. We didn't want anyone to know who we were. Mm-hmm. So it was this kind of like, who, the mystery behind it was putting people off. But then when Kendall posted, everyone's like, oh, I don't care anymore. I actually just want this brand. And so that really just like accelerated our growth beyond our like wildest imagination.
I mean, honestly, like, it's so funny because so much has changed and yet nothing has changed sense, you know, yeah. Where it's like, it just takes one. Like, it takes one person to give a new brand legitimacy, because honestly, like, there's so much out there. There's like scams all the time. You know? And so like, people are obviously afraid to take a bet on a new brand that they've never heard of. Yeah. And yet if it's like one person that gives the brand legitimacy, like, you can literally change the course of a business.
Well, this is the thing, because a lot of people say now, like, oh, these big influencers, they don't have, there's no conversion, which is true, right? Like, it's not how it used to be. Like, you can't do a post with someone huge and expect it's going to result in tons of sales. But what it can do is give brand positioning, legitimacy. It cements you as being like, this brand is something. They, at the very least, have the budget potentially to be paying someone well, or they have the reach to be able to get onto them, which is still very important and worth striving for.
It is, because honestly, like, I think it gives a brand cool factor, which is really important, especially in, like, I think the longevity of a brand, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, I see, like, the construction of a brand in two ways. Like, obviously, like, one part of it is, like, the revenue and, like, you know, the just, like, doing all of the things to optimize sales. And then the other is, like, building the actual brand. And stuff like this, like, the cool factor is really what cements it as something that people keep wanting to come back to and, like, want to associate with.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't, you know, everyone, I think, you know, and I know it's about making money and people get nervous and they want to be making money, but there is this whole other side of brand positioning and building a brand and knowing that that takes time, especially in today's, you know, climate where loyalty is, you know, people say it's gone. It's not gone. It's just way harder to get. And it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're trying to convince a customer to come back to you, you need to put the legwork in every way possible to convince them that.
Agreed.
So, like, this is why these things help. It shouldn't be your only strategy. And you shouldn't be like, Kendall's going to turn, you know, my business into like this multi-millionaire juggernaut, but it's going to help.
Yeah.
Absolutely going to help.
So you said something that kind of like got me thinking. You would sleep at 1 a.m. and wake up around 5, and the first thing you'd do is take your laptop onto your lap and start working.
Yes.
And I think that that is actually all too common, right? Like, I think founders tend to put themselves, their mental health, their health in general after their business. And it's almost something that you like push to the side, being like, I'll deal with it later, you know, like, I'll deal with it when it's less busy, but it's never less busy,
it's never less busy.
So talk to me about that time in your life and how you were doing mentally, because I know you've been very open about mental health and, you know, you've been like a real advocate for why that's so important. So talk to me about where you were at that time.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I was young. So it was that kind of exactly that, very naive. Like, I'll deal with my mental health when I'm older. That's nothing for me to worry about now. I'm in my late 20s. Like, I'm young, it's fine, I can work hard. And in a sense, you can at that age. You do have more in the tank. You probably don't have children yet, you know, and there has to be a level of hustle where it feels out of balance at times. But what you do need to do is have an understanding, an awareness. You have to really look at what you like. Some people can handle it better than others. Like, I was okay for a period of time. It wasn't until I had my son, which was at the very, very big year for us. It was 2015. It was like our biggest year. It was the year that everyone started coming for us in the sense of like, we want your brand. Like, we want to buy it. We want to invest. We want to wear it. We want. And that was so exciting. But I just had my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just in a, and that just set me into an absolute, I was all on my own. You know, I didn't have a network. I didn't have any connection with my family back home because they were just too far away, different time zone. So for me, that initial hustle period, I think, was fine. And it was okay. It was for a season, you know? Like, that's how I kind of approach those periods. It's like, you got to do it at times.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't, then your business will suffer. And there's a lot of, I think, older business people at the moment that are coming out saying, like, you guys need to work harder. Because I think the younger generation are coming through kind of being like, no, boundaries, work-life balance. it, well and good.
It can't be skewing one way or the other, yeah, though. You know, your boundaries can't be so strong that you're not able to hustle when you need to.
Exactly.
You know, it's like you have, like, that is the life work life balance, where like it can't be you're burning yourself to the ground like every day of the year and every little thing is just as busy as the next, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, there's periods where like really there's like a big fire burning, like maybe it's something's gone wrong or you're launching something or you're raising money.
Yes.
That's when you are like, fuck everything else.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
deserves this everything is, that yes, I've got, you
yeah,
know? But
yeah.
it can't be like that 24/7.
No, and I think what happens is people start in this mentality, which is fine and healthy, but then they don't let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those people. I was trying to do it all, running on no sleep, running on the adrenaline that I had from having a baby, using that to apply to the business. And
oh
then
my
wondering
God.
Why I just fell into a heap. And mm-hmm. then I ended up resenting, because this is the thing. If you do it for too long and you don't start to have some awareness, some space, you know, like put the phone down, like there's problems, like you said, there's fires that need to be put out, and there's fires that can burn for like weeks and they're fine, they're actually meant to be like that, you know, like that is where people just need to take the time. Like, there were so many things on reflection that I think I could have just let that go for a while, like I didn't have to deal with it then and there. But you get into this fight or flight mentality and this way of living and your cortisol is probably through the roof, where you actually don't even know how to come back down, and then suddenly the thing that scares me the most, I think, about people are the people that, and I see it all the time, the ones that are like normalize being on their phone checking their emails like 4 or 5 times a night. And I'm like, there are periods when you'd probably need to do that, like at a launch time, at, right, you know, because different time zones and you need to check in. But to be doing that as like a baseline is so unhealthy and not sustainable, and you will crash and burn. Like, people will, if they sustain that lifestyle, or maybe they won't, but they're not going to find that happiness because they can't even access it because they're running on stress literally every day, all day. And that's the people that then come to me, because I get the successful founders that always come to me that are like very candid to say things like, I'm not happy. I have this multi-million dollar business. I've built an empire and I'm fucking miserable and I don't know what to do. And it's always the same thing, because they have neglected any self-care, any sense of self, whatever, like whatever it is. And then they get to this and they don't even know who they are. And so they got all this money and success and it's all what they wanted, you know, inverted commas, what they wanted, and they can't even enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're questioning everything. And it happened to me. So it's like, I see it keep happening. And it's hard to kind of teach people when they're younger how to make that, you know, just like to discern that and to kind of be aware of it. But they just have to find a way. Like, you have to just start to learn how to know, like, who you are and what your triggers are, and work on yourself slowly, because otherwise you're going to be reactive to everything always, and that is just not the way to be.
So if you could go back in time, what would you do, I guess, differently?
Yeah, I think I would have started doing some work on myself, like seeing people, talking to people, like seeing a therapist, doing more spiritual work. Like, I only started doing that when I totally bottomed out.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming from that low, low, low base is not as fun as sort of seeing it in the moment. But I was younger. There weren't all these great podcasts that are out now educating people. Social media was still very like cool and magazine-y, and now it's so much more vulnerable and honest. Like, there's no excuse anymore. Like, if you're a founder today and you are burning yourself out thinking I'll deal with that in a couple of years, that is wrong. You need to start doing some work on it now. See a therapist and be really honest with yourself when you do that. Like, people, I think as well, when we're found, especially women, we want to put this like facade up or this front on that like we've got it. So you don't want to let anyone know that you're scared, that you actually don't think you're any good, that you don't know what you're going to do tomorrow. All these things, we're afraid to admit it.
Mm.
The thing is, if we're lying to ourselves in that way and we're not sharing it with anyone, we're going to believe that that is true, because we need to, like, especially me, I'm like, I have to externally express everything and process it that way. So I need to talk to people constantly to like say my biggest fears out loud and then have someone professional help me work through that.
Yeah.
That is what I would have done back then. It would have been very simple, just a slight little prioritize like an hour, couple of hours, a couple of times a week would have changed the course of my life.
I think really that's kind of all that it takes sometimes,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
It's, and like, this is the thing. It's almost like being preventative versus corrective, even when it comes to this sort of stuff, you know? Like, when you're in it, you're like, oh, like, I'll just deal with it later on a later date. And then like, you're just at your worst.
And at your worst.
Then
at your worst.
The work that you have to do to undo that is so much harder than if you had kind of like done it right from like the get-go.
Yeah. And it's real. Like, I think we're so, as founders and business people, we're so afraid of being afraid. Like, we want to look like we've got our shit together to everyone, to ourselves. Like, you want to look in the mirror and be like, I've got this. When sometimes you need to look in the mirror and be like, I'm so scared. Like, I'm terrible. Like, I sit with women that are same age as me that have done amazing things, who say the same things, that like they bluffed their way through every board meeting. They didn't know what they were going, like, and they'd walk out of there being like, oh my God, this, I don't know. Like, it's not like anyone is walking in knowing what they're doing. We are all guessing our way through this. There is no handbook for being a founder, and anyone that says there is a scammer, you know? Yeah. Like, it is literally thinking on your feet, feeling like you're never good enough. And I think when people are honest with themselves about that, and are, that is where the freedom comes, where you can be like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to have the afternoon off. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to have a rest because I'm going to honor that. It's like a lot of practice. And this is the thing, people are like, I'm too busy to even do that. And it's like, well, it's going to catch up with you if you don't.
It's so interesting because I'm like getting to the point where I'm giving myself permission.
Yes.
To do that, you know, because I'm 4 years into Array, and my husband's my co-founder. So, like, I mean, we're together and all of that. So it's a little.
Yeah, the 24/7. Yeah.
But, you know, like, I'm just starting to give myself permission to be like, okay, like, I'm allowed, like, to feel like shit.
Yes.
Sometimes. It's not all the time, you know, but like once in a blue moon, like, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. Like, I'm human. I'm allowed to process these feelings, and like, it's normal.
Yeah. You know? And I have this thing that, like, if you're having those days, and some people can have a lot of those days, some people don't get them often, some people have them a lot. I'm always like, if you feel overwhelmed and you just feel and you don't want to do anything, instead of sitting there pushing yourself, feeling awful, just do like one thing, like tick one thing off your list. Yeah. Because if you have that mentality of like, I'm moving myself forward, it's like, could be the most menial small task. But if your mindset is that I've still done something to move myself forward today, then that's going to get you, that's going to give you permission to like take the rest of the day off, just like close your laptop, do whatever, like go for a walk. Yeah. I'm very big on like, I like to go for a walk, like clear my head, like get out of my head. Like, and I go for a walk. I don't even put a podcast on. I don't listen to music. I literally walk. And then I come back and I'm like, oh, I feel better.
Oh, that's so nice.
Like, it's like small things.
Yeah, we have to come up with our own systems.
Everyone has to find it. And you have to give yourself the time to find it. Otherwise, it is more natural just to keep working, right? Like, that feels more natural, but it's going to be detrimental.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you then step away from Triangle? Because you said 2015 was like, it was like the craziest year. Yeah. So then what happens then?
Yeah, so that was like, I didn't exit until 3 years later. So there was 3 years of me getting progressively worse mentally.
Oh my God, Erin.
Yeah, and trying to, I mean, we were like, our lives completely changed. Like, we moved to Monaco. We like had a super yacht. We like went to the top 1% of like how people live. And it was so, that in itself is a lot to deal with. Like, it's, as much as it's a total blessing and it's amazing to be financially secure, to have such a lifestyle change so quickly is very confronting and very isolating, because suddenly you are like a totally different person.
Also, the one thing that I want to call out here is that you said earlier that because you guys had moved, you didn't even have the support system of back home. And I think that entrepreneurship can be very isolating and very lonely unless you have other founder friends.
Yeah.
So if everyone's kind of doing it together, it's not as stark. But if it's just you doing it on your own, there's like, let's move to Monaco and like, we have a super yacht now. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's pretty jarring.
It is jarring. And you don't have anyone to kind of, I guess, like keep your feet on the ground with you. And like, it's not like we got, like the egos didn't blow, or not in my case anyway. Like, I just sort of, it felt like I was living a life outside of myself. Mm. Like, when I look back on it, it was like, I was just wanting so badly for the happiness and fulfillment to come, because I assumed that it would just naturally show up when we made all this money and became really commercially successful. And then when it didn't, I was like, where is it? Like, where is this happiness? And so that just kept getting worse. Like, for me, it just kept getting worse. I had no one. I didn't want to verbalize it to anyone. Mm. I wanted to internalize it. So the way that made me feel, like all day pushing these like feelings down, and then that came out as resentment to literally everything and everyone around me, except for my son. He was the only one that was like, really, I put so much codependency on him, like saving me. Everyone else I hated. I hated Triangle. I hated Craig. I hated everything. I was like, I hated Monaco. I hated our boat. I hated everything. I blamed everything around me because I was struggling so much and I couldn't work out that like I was the problem, that I needed to go and do some work to figure out what was actually going on and why I was struggling so much. And it was just, it was like the lack of connection, the isolation, you know. Craig and I were in a really, really unhealthy relationship because we'd never worked on ourselves separately and together. So it wasn't, it was just toxic from almost the get-go. And that got worse and worse as I started to retreat from him and from the business because I just didn't want to do anything anymore. And I was just sitting in Monaco, miserable. And I became so, I had my second baby during all of this as well. And we actually, Craig and I separated when I was like 9 months pregnant, like literally weeks before giving birth, because it was just like way too much for us. And I just thought, I can't do this again. Like, I can't have another baby and work on the brand. And the funny thing is, we separated and then I just, and then agreed for me to take Triangle over. So I, which I thought at the time was really exciting. So dumb. Moved to New York with a 3 week old on my own. Craig stayed in Monaco. It was dead of winter. It was February.
it's like if you're not already depressed, the seasonal depression will really do it for you.
And it was just just numbness, like trying to sort of get this business going in a way that I wanted to, not even knowing what that meant for me. Trying to unlock an ambition and a drive in me that had been very long departed from my life. And trying to navigate that, and then ended up sort of giving all of that up and then saying, I need to get out and I need to like go and do something else. I just need to start fresh. And I naively even thought that when I would exit Triangle, that then I would feel good. I was like, I was just waiting for these like things to make me feel good, these external things. Like, if I take over Triangle, I'll feel better. If I exit Triangle, I'll feel better. If Craig and I separate, I'll feel better. Nothing was making me feel better until I actually head on faced the fact that I was suffering because I was suffering. It wasn't to do with anything around me. It was totally internal.
So what did you do then?
Yeah, so I was living in Monaco still, and I'd moved back from New York, lived in Monaco for like another 6 months, and then had a horrific 2 week period where I had such bad physical anxiety, I thought I was dying. Like, the whole heart palpitations, couldn't sleep, like hallucinating. Lost 5 kilos in 2 weeks because I couldn't put food into my mouth. It would like make me gag. It was so terrifying because before that I'd always been a little skeptical of anyone that had physical anxiety because I'd never experienced it. So I was a bit like, I don't know, is that in your head? And then when I had it, I was like, wow, like this is so scary, like so scary. And that was basically my body saying, we're done. Like, you've ignored my, like, the brain and the mind and the heart for so long. Now the body is going to tell you that you need to go and do something. So it was, we were back in Hong Kong for like a little period of time because Craig and I were sort of trying to reconcile, and like, it was just an absolute like shit show. And I booked a flight that night, said to Craig, I have to go home. Like, I'm done. Took my two boys back to Australia the next morning, never returned to Monaco, like left my apartment, left everything in there, go back to Australia and just started to work myself out, which sucked because I moved back to Australia. Of course, I'm back in Australia. I miss Triangle. So like, there's this big ego piece around who I'd become, which I was trying to hang on to because that was a little more avoidance from the work I needed to do on myself. And then eventually I just like gave in and was like, okay, cool. This feels terrible. I'd wake up in the morning. I was so out of my body, like so disconnected, you know, like couldn't even land a thought. Like, it was just these like it felt like these short, sharp, electrical like pulses of thoughts constantly as opposed to like a flow of thoughts. It was so weird. It was just like not me. And so I was like, I have to just be honest with someone and sit with someone and say everything about everything and see where that goes, because it cannot be worse than the way I feel now.
So for anyone who may be going through something similar,
yeah,
talk about how you went from there to where you are right now, because, you know, I'm sitting with you and of course, like, it's impossible to know what's going on with someone's like, you know, personal life, but you are like a very vibrant person, you know, you're there, like you're a big advocate for mental health. So how do you go from there, which is like a very dark time, and like double that with the fact that you left your business, which, I mean, when you have a brand, I feel like your identity is so intertwined with that brand that when you leave, like, I mean, I'm not blaming you for having that ego piece, you know, like it's such a natural thing. So it's like all these big life events, you move. So where, how do you go from there to where you are today?
Yeah. So for me, it was, you know, and what I recommend people doing is find someone professional, you know, therapy, kinesiology, psychology, whoever it is for you. And you can try different things as well. Like, it doesn't have to be set in stone. Just find the person, mm-hmm. whoever they are. Go as far wide as you can and then be honest. Be like, the most like fucked up thoughts you have about yourself, you have to share them. Like, you have to get them out. Like, whatever it is. And you have to go on this. Like, for me, it was like what I thought was just healing from like the triangle experience was like, oh, in my childhood. Oh, great. Yeah, let's go there, you know. And that had to happen because it's all the things. And for me, I was doing that while still doing all these toxic things. You know, it's not like I stopped and I just like, because I was, you know, taking drugs, drinking alcohol, being really like not being there for my kids at all, like being so distant, just like really like angry at the world. And like, I was still doing a lot of those things whilst I started this journey to feel better. And that's more realistic. I think people think, okay, I have to stop everything. I have to stop everything and then start on this journey. And then like, I will be like awakened. And it's like, that's not reality. Reality is you start this journey of seeing someone or seeing people or doing things or whatever it is for you. And you're still doing the shit. You're still doing the low vibe stuff. That is normal. That's like part of the whole thing. If you stay consistent with the work that you're doing on yourself, like the good work, then you will start to notice these little moments of like, oh my God, I reacted to that a lot differently. Oh, wow. Oh my God, I learned that about myself. And like, oh, little things. For me, what I noticed that had changed is that I would like sing in the car, or I'd like walk down the hallway like singing to myself, which I don't reckon I'd done in years, but it was something that I'm a naturally very up there person, you know, like I'm bright, I've got a lot of energy, and I'd lost that. So when I started feeling that was coming back, I was like, oh my God, this is working. Oh, I think I'm coming back to myself. And then I'm still doing it now. Mm. It's not like I've arrived in a place. Like,
of course.
You constantly, as soon as you think that, then you get like literally hit in the face with like another lesson that you have to learn.
No, I mean, I think it's like a constant journey. Oh, like, yeah. You always have to work on yourself. The work always. Is never done.
It's never done. And that's the beauty of it, because it shouldn't be. And it's just like, the more I got to understand myself, and in a way where it was like, I got to understand my flaws. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to understand the things that weren't great about me, that mm-hmm. I didn't like about me. Those are the things that saved me. Like, mm-hmm. those are the things that lifted me up and made me become this person that I love, you know? Accepting the shit about me is why I love me, you know?
I love that. That's such a good lesson that I think everyone can take away.
Because we're all so afraid of that. Like, we all think that, but the thing is, we are all as screwed up in the head as the next person. And that's the beauty of it, because mm-hmm. it's like, that just like sets you free, you know? Yeah. Like, it really does. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, you know, as my husband would say, I probably go too far with this. I'll be like, maybe that's just me. That's just me. And he's like, no. He's like, that's shit. Like, he's like, that's a cop out. But usually I use it for the betterment of myself. Like, everything, it's like, oh, I didn't act very well then. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually didn't handle that very well. So for me, I'm like, no shame, just do better next time, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And when it's like, when you can think that about yourself, like, do better and say it without shame, like, you're like, I can do better without like, I'm awful. That feels good.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Okay. So now that we're getting honestly like right to the very end of our conversation, I actually have one last question for you. So you kind of created one of the most viral brands of the 2010s, okay?
Yeah.
Very different era.
Yeah.
So to start a brand today, what would you do to kind of like, I guess, like create the same sort of hype?
Yeah. Look, it's different. I mean, I am starting a brand, so I'm putting myself to the test with it. I don't have an interest in being viral. Like, I don't want to be a hype brand. It would be great if it happened, and I will do all these things to support it in the sense of building the customer connection, getting the product so right, finding the product market fit, what's my distribution, all of these things, right? But I'm not there to be a unicorn business that like goes to the moon tomorrow. Mm-hmm. There are things that we did at the Triangle era that are even more relevant now, is like the personalized customer care. And what I'm seeing with the brands that are doing really well is the offline customer loyalty care. It's the stuff that's not on socials.
Yes.
It's not done for clicks. It's not done for content. It's genuinely done because you value the people that are supporting you and buying your product. Mm-hmm. That is something that we did at Triangle so well. They kind of got lost in the hype of it all, that I think is so relevant still now, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just going slower. Like, I want to build a brand that's around for forever. You know, I don't want to build a brand that there's so many founders, I think. And if, you know, if someone's listening and they are one of these founders, it's okay. But they start a brand for the exit. They're like,
yes, 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 yes.
Oh, I know. It's like, oh, yep. Blue Sky. I'm going to start this brand. And in 3 years, I'm going to exit. And it's like, okay, that's like saying a horse is a sure thing to win. Like, come on. Like,
and also, I think you're right. There's like two types of founders. Some who are like starting the brand to exit and others who maybe want to run it sustainably for a long time. The decisions that you make are very different depending
on
like which path you want to take.
Yeah.
Not that one is better than the other, by the way.
No,
but like,
it's just
different. It's different. Like, you know, we're talking about, for example, mental health and sustainability, right? Like if your goal is to exit in 3 years, then maybe, you do kind of have to like light the fire under your ass
See,
and be
this
like.
that terrifies me because like I value my mental health so much.
I
value
agree.
Like waking up in the morning and like every day being my perfect day.
Same.
So that means I have to take the pressure off.
Yeah.
Like, and building a long-term business that doesn't have to be immediately gangbuster successful is way nicer in my day. It makes my decision-making feel more calm, makes my team feel less pressured. It's just like, I don't want to be in a pressurized situation really at all. Like, it should be fun.
Yeah.
You know, because we do, work and life is so blurred in Australia and in the States. It's like, we just don't have that balance. Like, it's just, we're all workers and it's great, you know, and it's just like finding, you know, finding that way through it in a joyful way, wherever it can be. Like, it sounds so lame, but it should be fun most of the time. Otherwise, why are we doing, like, why am I doing it?
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, I feel like that's a very great place to end. This has been a joy. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks,
tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, well, I'm on Instagram. I'm kind of on TikTok, but I'm not because I'm a bit of a millennial dinosaur. So I'm launching a brand in September. So that will all be unfolding in the next few months. That's
gosh.
Why I'm here in the States. So
everyone's got to follow your journey into September. That's so exciting.
And so soon. But it's exciting. I'm like so ready to have a brand again and hopefully not burn out, because that'll be really bad if I do burn out. And then I'm like, oh, so everything I've been teaching was a scam.
Well, we're all going to be here cheering you
Thank
on from
you.
The sidelines. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you loved the episode and feel like it brought you value, don't forget to rate the show and leave a review. It takes 5 seconds and really helps the show grow so I can keep bringing on awesome guests. If you want to follow me behind the scenes, you can find me on Instagram at Sif Hyder. And don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss a thing. I drop new episodes every Tuesday, so come hang with me and shoot the shit with some really smart people, learn and unlearn, and have a lot of fun. See you next week.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.